Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, on the 21st of November, the day before the 59th observance of the assassination of JFK, an issue to which I shall return, and where I expect Wednesday I'll spend virtually the whole show talking about the assassination and what you need to know. I have promoted collaborative research and brought together experts in diverse fields to sort out not only what happened to JFK, but what happened on 9/11, what happened to Paul Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing. Given we know so much now we didn't know then about JFK, I want to share it with you. I'll give you a little preliminary, some of the highlights later today. Meanwhile, I think this Twitter thing with Elon Musk, you know, shelling out $22 billion more than he needed. I think Twitter wasn't worth half of the $44 billion he paid, but he's turning it into a free speech platform. He's fired the four ranking officials in the company with justification, including the chief of censorship. And he's got rid of half of the staff, which were also involved in censoring. I mean, it's just been a massive censorship operation. So turns out I've been restored to Twitter, so I'm going to have to rebuild. I'm at Jim Fetzer. I'm going to have to rebuild my followers. When I was unceremoniously deplatformed, I had about 2,500 tweets and 2,500 followers, and there was no notice or explanation whatsoever. Boom, I was gone. When I sought to be reinstated just a few days ago, I was told that I'd been taken out for copyright infringements, but I'd never been noticed of any purported copyright infringement. It may have been because I republished articles that have other sources. Yes? Let me call you back. I'm on the air. I'll call you. Yeah. What we have going on here is, you know, I was notified I had no I'd never been notified of a copyright infringement, but I frequently do republish articles from other sources on my blog, and I would have been tweeting them. And what many may not notice is that at the name of the author, you find a link to the original article. I do this as a regular matter, but whether Twitter was aware is a whole nother question. Meanwhile, what we have going on here, Trump made a major move in court a day before he announced his 2024 bid, before Elon Musk acquired the social media platform. Users who stated conservative views or questioned edicts being spoken by the Democrat government were censored or blocked. Among those who had their accounts banned was none other than the President of the United States, Donald Trump. On January 8, 2021, 2 days after the Capitol incursion, Twitter announced its decision to permanently ban Trump's account with his over 80 million followers due to the risk of further incitement of violence. Twitter was judge and jury deciding if the president had done anything wrong. We'll get this. Now that he's been restored, we have access to the last two tweets that he gave. Listen to this. It's kind of hard to lead an insurrection when you're telling everyone to remain peaceful and support the Capitol Police to stay peaceful. Last night, Elon Musk reinstated Trump's Twitter account hours after a poll of users asked if the 45th president should be reinstated. More than 51 million participated. 51.8 voted yes, 48.2 voted no. I cannot believe 48% of the people would want to suppress the voice of Donald Trump, the single most important political figure in the United States today. Trump's Twitter account was up and running shortly after Musk agreed to reinstate it. Since his account was taken down on January 8, 2021, his tweets from that week were the last messages he posted on Twitter before the left silenced him. Here they were. Look what popped up. Donald J. Trump, 1621. I am asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful. No violence. Remember, we are the party of law and order. Respect the law and our great men and women in blue. Thank you. Or, again, 1621. Please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful. I believe they had to ban because those tweets contradicted the official narrative they were going to promote. I mean, unbelievable. There they are, just showing how much bullshit we get from the Republican, from the Democrat Party under Biden and the January 6th commission. Just horse shit. Just a monster pile of horse shit. The social media giant said at the time, Trump's tweets violated Twitter's policies against the glorification of violence. But there was no glorification of violence there. He was calling for law and order and peace. The 45th president launched a lawsuit over the banning. In May, San Francisco-based District Judge James Donato dismissed Trump's lawsuit, claiming his Fifth Amendment right had been violated by Twitter's decision. In reaction to his censoring of his posts, Trump launched his new social media platform, Social Truth, earlier this year. While the lawsuit has been pending, his new platform has exploded with participants with over 4.5 million followers. In a move that came one day before he launched his campaign to return to the White House, former President Trump filed an appeal in federal court Monday in a lawsuit against former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, and that would have been last Monday, a week before today, and the federal government over Twitter's 2021 decision to permanently suspend his account. In their Monday court filing at the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, Trump's attorney sought a court order requiring Twitter to immediately reinstate the account as well as compensatory and punitive damages for the ban. Concerning the federal government, the Constitution precluded it from censoring disfavored speech. Trump's team contended so officials do an end run with the help of big tech. I think that's absolutely right. I think the same thing has happened with Amazon.com, banning my books on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, even the moon landing. So it's clear that wasn't because of essays disputing the moon landing, but because of essays disputing the official narrative of World War II involving the alleged use of these camps as death chambers, to wit, the official narrative of the Holocaust. The Anti-Defamation League asked Amazon to ban any book that disputed the official narrative, and Amazon obliged by banning from 200 to 2,000, which included, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, which my series editor, Mike Palachek, had proposed as a suitable title. One might ask the question in response to the title of our first. Nobody died at Sandy Hook, you might say, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Well, we didn't go to the moon either. But the fact is, I'm working on a lawsuit against Amazon for precisely the same rationale. So this is very, very good. Congress gave social media companies and other internet denizens a golden gift enjoyed by no one else in the publishing industry: immunity from liability based on hosting or removing content on their platform, the brief says. The government uses social media platforms as cat's paws to suppress opinions and information about matters Americans consider of vital interest, including those that turn out to be correct or at least debatable. The lawyers cite Hunter Biden's laptop, the coronavirus Wuhan lab leak theory, the efficacy of COVID vaccine, and the discussion about the integrity of the 2020 election as examples where the government swayed the content of social media platforms. This is excellent. This is totally 100% appropriate. I am all with Donald Trump in this lawsuit. This is on behalf of every American in our First Amendment right. Most people once believed these to be crackpot ideas. Many still do. But crackpot ideas sometimes turn out to be true. The earth does revolve around the sun, and it was Hunter Biden, not Russian disinformation agents, who dropped off a laptop full of incriminating evidence at a repair shop in Delaware. Galileo spent his remaining days under house arrest for spreading heretical ideas, and thousands of dissidents today are arrested or killed by despotic governments eager to suppress ideas of which they disapprove. But this is not the American way. We believe the path to truth is forged by exposing all ideas to opposition, debate, and discussion. How true. How many times have you heard me extol the position of Sir Karl Popper, the great British philosopher, when he advocated rational discussion and debate as our most successful method for discovering the truth? What's happened in our courts today, by the way, is they're no longer adversarial. The Alex Jones cases demonstrate beyond any question that they've turned into kangaroo courts with predetermined decisions and outcomes, which I would suggest is why my petition for a rehearing and now before the Supreme Court, where it will be heard in conference on December 2nd, where I'll learn the outcome on December 5th, is so terribly important. Really, asking the court to set right the summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin, which allow the judge to exercise his own subjective opinion to determine the facts, regardless of the evidence. That's what these social media companies have been doing. They've been exercising their own subjective opinion to make up the facts, to decide what is information and what is misinformation, where information may be true or may be false. Declaring it to be misinformation is to declare it to be false. But how the hell would Amazon, how the hell would Twitter know whether these various issues, the Wuhan lab theory, Hunter Biden's laptop, the efficacy of COVID, integrity of 2020. How could they possibly know whether they're true or false, absent open discussion, debate, evidence, and argument? Trump has said he has no plans to return to Twitter. However, Trump attorney John Collette told Reuters Monday, we want him to have the right to get back on Twitter, pointing out the cases about the right of free speech in America using social media platforms. Yes, spot on. Trump's lawyers pointed out Twitter had censored their client's account multiple times prior to its decision to suspend him altogether, which they argue is detrimental to public discourse and due to threats made by government officials against social media platforms, a violation of their client's First Amendment rights. 100% correct. Notable is the fact that many posts by Trump and others, which were deemed by Twitter as misinformation, have now been proven to be true. When Elon Musk purchased Twitter, he spoke out for free speech and social media in addition to many other changes Musk is making in the running of the platform. This past week, he reinstated accounts at Jordan Peterson, Kathy Griffin, and the Babylon Bee satire news outlet. Musk is defining the difference between banning and limiting reach of accounts which may contain hate speech in their posts, and in a somewhat satiric MOOC himself, has started a Twitter poll asking users if they think former President Trump's Twitter account should be reinstated. Musk has a history of posting polls about actions that he's already planned to do. Well, I think that's all super fine. I don't have any problem with it. And by the way, as a way to get my Twitter account back in action, if any of you would like to follow me, just, you know, follow at Jim Fetzer. I would be very pleased, and I'll be glad to get a whole lot of tweets about significant issues out to each and every one of you. Please consider following me on Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. Meanwhile, Carrie Lake has responded to speculation she might drop Trump after the midterm. Why would anyone even think remotely that Carrie Lake would do such a thing? I mean, what a dumb idea. Arizona GOP gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake responded to speculation she could be a conservative star if she pivots away from former President Trump, who has endorsed her. Well, she's going to be a conservative star staying with Trump. My God, there is no bigger star in the conservative firmament than Donald Trump. If she concedes graciously in the coming days, see, they're trying to talk her into this is manipulative, and weeks, then I think there could be a path for her in the future in politics in Arizona, said political consultant Lorna Romero. What bullshit. In the Washington Examiner, which isn't politically biased like the Washington Post, continuing to say, it still seems like she's mulling over a potential lawsuit over the way Maricopa County handled the election. And if Lake goes down that route, I think she will forever be branded as a Trump-type candidate. Well, she's acting as though that were a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. James Carville, by the way, has added that they saved 57 seats in the House because of Trump. Well, that's bullshit. They saved 57 seats in the House because they stole them. And by the way, that's not an incredible number. Think about it. Barack Obama in his first midterm lost 63 seats. That's even more. And Barack Obama didn't have the handicap of being universally despised like Joe Biden. He didn't have the reputation of being cognitively incompetent. He didn't have soaring crime, massive migration, an economy in shambles, gas and food prices rising astronomically, tantalizing experiments with nuclear war by providing all this funding to Ukraine. And now we know, of course, it was a laundry money scheme. It was money was being sent back to the United States to the Democrats. No wonder they were so eager to get those billions to Ukraine. It was coming back to fatten their coffers to steal the midterm election in 2022. Disgusting. And this Lorna Romero, I regard as a political hack. This is ridiculous. Claiming if she goes down the legal route. She's just trying to dissuade her when Kerry's got a wonderful case. I can't imagine an election having been more blatantly stolen than occurred in Maricopa County. I think her political career in Arizona will be over at that point. Her only path would be on a conservative talk show. How silly is that? After the Washington Examiner published his story on Twitter, Lake responded, never, never. Here you get the Washington Examiner tweet. Carrie Lake can be a conservative superstar if she dumps Trump, strategist says. Carrie Lake responds, never. I'm with her. President Trump announces his 24 presidential list, she read, wrote on Social Truth. Following the former president's announcement, he'll make a third bid for the White House. He has my complete and total endorsement, as he has mine. During the Republican primary, Lake received Trump's endorsement, allowing her to win the party's nomination over a candidate backed by current Governor Doug Ducey and former Vice President Mike Pence, who turned out to be a pathetic loser, in my opinion. Mike Pence has no future. He's going nowhere. Earlier this week, Democrat Katie Hobbs declared a victory over Lake, although the GOP candidate has said she's aiming to assemble a legal team to fire lawsuits amid reports of election irregularities in Maricopa County. At the same time, Lake said she won't concede the race and said workers were disenfranchised or faced delays on November 8th. That's minimal. Rest assured, I have assembled the best and brightest legal team, and we are exploring every avenue to correct the many wrongs that have been done this past week. Blake, a local former TV news anchor, said in a new video published Thursday, I'm doing everything in my power to right these wrongs, and added, what happened to Arizonans on Election Day is unforgivable. Also on her Twitter page, she posted videos from voters who alleged tabulation machines on Election Day refused to take their ballots. Election officials in Maricopa County confirmed vote tabulation machines in some precincts had printer problems, telling voters to place their ballots in on-site drop boxes. This was called door number three. They were trash bins. It's like dropping your trash. If you go to McDonald's, there's a hole there, right, for the trash. That's door three. This is just disgusting beyond belief. Some of the voters tried to scan their ballots a dozen times, but they wouldn't take them. Why? Because we were voting Republican. Because the scanners were programmed that way. They were only accepting like 1 out of 10. That means 90% of the Republican vote was being dumped into door number three and taken out with the trash. Reports indicated she traveled to Mar-a-Lago and met with a former president since. Rest assured, here we have further news. This is very significant. Breaking. Arizona AG just took major emergency action in stolen election. When the 2020 presidential election produced surprising results leaning toward Democrat candidates, eyebrows were raised. But in the recent midterm election in Arizona, given the previous election stamp, whose situations arose that even go against the state laws regarding elections, Arizona gubernatorial cabinet Carrie Lake's campaign was confident she had the votes to win for a good reason. Just to give you one illustration, only 17% of the voters on Election Day were Democrats. Only 83% were Republicans. And many of the Democrats were even voting Republican. And yet Katie Hobbs got 50% of the vote. Combined with the mail-in ballots, you see, that gave her the lead, the win. But it was all disgusting. It was all stolen and grossly and obviously and blatantly. Arizona GOP candidate was confident, but the last minute, her competitor pulled ahead amid questionable circumstances. Lake and her campaign have now called for a redo in Maricopa County in light of all the problems, and her call has been answered by the state assistant attorney general. I like this. Arizona assistant attorney general Jennifer Wright with the Elections Integrity Unit wrote a letter to the Maricopa County officials Saturday demanding an accounting for the widespread ballot tabulation and ballot printer problems seen during the general election on November 8th. Good for her. Among the most troubling issues raised in the letter, directed to one Thomas Liddy with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, was the apparent commingling of ballots in black duffel bags in at least one polling location, which was successfully run through the on-site tabulator with those put on door 3 to be sent to the Election Department's downtown Phoenix Tabulation Center because they could not be read. This is part of the way they steal elections, you see. They create all these ballot mysteries that have to go to a special review where there's no documentation whatsoever over how the special review is done. So even if it was all marked for Republican up and down, they could say this is a Democrat ballot. And there's no one there to verify it. This is one of the principal mechanisms they use to steal elections. The Election Integrity Unit of the Arizona Attorney General's Office has received hundreds of complaints since Election Day pertaining to issues related to the administration of the 2022 general election in Maricopa County, Wright wrote. These complaints go beyond pure speculation, include firsthand witness accounts that raise concern regarding Maricopa's lawful compliance with the Arizona election law. Based on sworn complaints employed by Maricopa County, the printers were tested on Monday, November 7th, with no apparent problems, she wrote. Despite these tests, the printers began malfunctioning within the first half an hour on Election Day. In light of this, the AG's office wants logs related to all of it. This is good. Maricopa County has admitted in some voting location, door 3, non-tabulated ballots were commingled with tabulated ballots at the voting location. This is very, very good. And Kerry rightfully believes that with the support of the Attorney General, she shall prevail. Let it be done.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Another development I find rather disgusting is that Mitch McConnell is already hyping compromise as a Senate minority leader. And by the way, when Trump announced he was running again, I found his speech highly disappointing. I wanted him to come out with all guns blazing about the theft of the midterm, which was, if anything, even more blatant than the theft of the 2020 election. Grotesque. Not only that, but I felt it was a perfect occasion for him to attack the vax, warn people against using it, and to make amends, some kind of quasi-apology for warp speed. He needs that to set his ship upstate afloat, to make it back on course. This is really serious. And when I say I'm still supporting Trump, I do believe he's the guy who has the deepest connection with the American people, who can do the most to get us back on track. But he squandered an opportunity there, in my opinion. So what's going on with Mitch McConnell? Strong leaders stand on principle and only work toward compromise when it aligns with those established standards. But right out of the gate, newly elected, reelected Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is trumpeting his commitment to barter, to make bargains with the Biden White House. Now, you got to understand, the Biden White House has done nothing but move to attack and destroy America since it came into office. Nothing but. I cannot think of a single measure taken by Biden that has been beneficial to the American people, from his first act of canceling the XL pipeline and revoking permits to drill on federal land, to, you know, my God, he's still going for migration, still going for all this other happy horseshit. It's unbelievable. The top Republican, in a message to the president, said the parties need to find areas of agreement similar to those reached thus far in 2022. He included the massive infrastructure package, computer chips, school safety, and mental health treatment. McConnell should be basking in the glow of his 37-10 re-election tally and lining up the Republican agenda. That agenda is made far more achievable by the House coming under the control of the Republicans. Instead, he trumpeted efforts to find common ground between the 40-yard lines with the Democrat administration. There is no common ground. Further showing his unwillingness to stand against Biden and his allies, he sounded much like the White House this week when explaining his party's underwhelming performance. Underwhelming because of the theft of the election. Have no doubt about it. Underwhelming. And the fact of the matter is that we have Schumer making very similar comments to those that are being made here by Schumer claiming that, you know, this was a repudiation of the Republicans, that this was a vindication of the policies of the Democrats, when it was nothing of the kind, not even remotely. Everyone was getting away from the Democrats. Everyone was abandoning ship. Hispanics abandoning ship. Blacks abandoning ship. Catholics abandoning ship. White suburban women abandoning ship. So what are they doing? What are they doing now that we have the Republicans in a position to conduct investigations in the House, where we have Jim Jordan as a potential, you know, and I would like to see this happen rather than Kevin McCarthy, who seems to be another compromiser along the lines of Mitch McConnell. What we need is someone who's going to take a strong stand. So when they know there's that massive threat, what are they going to do to cope with it? Merrick Garland names a special counsel on Trump, even though there's no special counsel appointed on Hunter Biden. How ridiculous is that? Attorney General Merrick Garland reportedly plans to name a special counsel to investigate former President Trump, even though he's yet to name a counsel to investigate Joe Biden or his son Hunter. Garland has named John L. Smith as special counsel during a televised press statement Friday. Smith is the Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, one of the most highly politicized left-wing departments within the agency. Hunter Biden acknowledged in December of 2020 he'd been under federal investigation for possible tax violations. Since then, the investigation reportedly broadened to include more of his global business dealings. However, the attorney general has declined to appoint a special counsel despite criticism from legal scholars who say greater political independence is needed in an inquiry involving the president's own family. The Wall Street Journal reported Friday, the special counsel will assess whether criminal charges are merited in connection with the handling of classified documents at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Even though we have the FBI admitting that it was a big nothing burger, that they found nothing wrong, they're going to continue the attempt to try to find a crime to pin on the person. rather than to have a crime and try to find who is responsible. This is the opposite. They know who they want to criminalize. They know who they want to indict. They just got to find a reason to do it. A final announcement would come after Trump announced another bid for the presidency earlier this week. The Washington Post reported nearly a week after the midterm that the Mar-a-Lago documents were of a personal interest. There was no indication the former president intended to sell any national secrets, but that story has largely been ignored. It was all bullshit. Here you have Sundance from the conservative treehouse analyzing exactly what is going on. I'm impressed. Biden DOJ assigned special counsel to investigate Republicans in Congress and President Trump for insurrection. Additionally, investigate Trump for DOJ defined classified documents and obstruction. Get this. Okay, first things first. Conservative treehouse will not play the pretending game or structure the discussion of the special counsel appointments from mainstream references. We'll stick to the facts, explain the events as they are reflected within the actual documents, and avoid pretending constructs. The overarching lawfare framework has been transparently created by President Obama's former White House legal counsel, current U.S. Assistant General Lisa Monaco, to wit. Earlier this afternoon, Biden's Attorney General announced the appointment of DOJ Attorney Jack Smith as special counsel to investigate two specific areas. First, to investigate current Republican members of Congress, House and Senate, former President and current candidate Trump, former Trump administration officials, former White House staff, and other individuals, groups, and organizations for their role in supporting an insurrection on January 6th against the incoming administration of President-elect Biden. Essentially, in other words, the January 6th investigation, with an emphasis on Congress, is now being transferred to the special counsel. This is thus an extension of the January 6th committee's special investigation that entails the transfer of the committee's investigative findings, phone records, text messages, transcripts, emails, print testimony, and evidential records into the newly appointed special counsel. However, all prior and current DOJ prosecution against citizen individuals will remain within the control and direction of Maine justice. This arrangement frees up Jack Smith to target the new Republican-controlled congressional members, their staff, families, or communication. Maine justice keeps focus on the citizen insurrectionist Jack Smith, now appointed to go after public officials. Very bad. Second, ancillary to the first, Deputy Attorney General Monaco has written in Garland has appointed Smith to target Trump with the same special counsel process previously used by Robert Mueller and Andrew Weissman. The Trump Mar-a-Lago document investigation, a proverbial nothing burger, just like Trump Russia, transfers to the special counsel office along with an intended angle to look for an obstruction of justice charge, just like Mueller. This is Robert Mueller 2.0 using special counsel Jack Smith. The Trump-centric part of the special counsel appointment, the part everyone is focusing upon, is ancillary to the real purpose of the appointment. That said, all investigative resources from Maine Justice and the FBI will transfer to Jack Smith, as they did when Crossfire Hurricane transferred to Robert Mueller. That, of course, was the effort to tie Trump to Russia with a phony dossier and FISA court wiretaps. The investigating people will transfer along with the investigative evidence. Duplicating history. All of the D.C. elements of the Uniparty, both Democrat and Republican, will sing the praises of Jack Smith as an honorable man beyond reproach, blah, blah, blah. If you want to stop playing the pretending game, just pay attention to the people praising him, and those voices are the bad guys. As you can see from the simple non-pretending explanation of what is being done, the lawfare process becomes clear. Everything Congress may now begin to question falls under the protective blanket of an ongoing investigation, exactly as we predicted. Plus, you get the additional lawfare elements of congressional leadership under investigation, which provides an entirely new conflict of interest dynamic to the political equation. Then you have the congressional representatives under investigation and search warrants on their phones, text messages, emails, and more, and the added benefit of using DOJ, NSD-defined terms of national security threat to gain FISA warrants on an entire incoming congressional delegation. How slick is that? This also explains why Nancy Pelosi did not resign from Congress, but only stepped down from her leadership role. The timing of mid-November today gives Smith time to get all his midterm counteroffensive ducks in a row before his Republican targets take office in January. All the congressional J6 and DOJ main justice teams will now assemble in new D.C. offices to set up the 2023 targeting operation. The announcement was made today. But the planning of the construct has been in place for months, contingent upon the number of actual House seats that could flip. The lawfare design is transparent when you stop looking into the obfuscation reporting from mainstream media. Primary goal? Create enough of a legal mess to obstruct any Republican legislative effort against the Biden White House. Additionally, if Smith's D.C. team can pick off a few Republican House members under charges of supporting an insurrection, the political power will revert back to the Democrats in office in the House of Representatives. Jack Smith's curriculum vitae as a lawyer, experience in international government law. Think about tribunals for throwing governments. Then becomes a clarifying skill set for the role he's undertaking here. Think of it like the legal ideology of the United Nations. Democracy is defined by progressives prosecuting members of the U.S. government for acts of rebellion under the framework of a constitutional Republican form of government they abhor. That's Jack Smith. In addition, the same ideological lawfare elements will be targeting the threat represented by U.S. nationalistic politician Donald J. Trump. It's like the Great Reset crew inserting an operative inside a corrupt and friendly United States Department of Justice with the intent to remove the threat Donald J. Trump represents to their interests. On the multinational corporate side, all this is special counsel stuff is taking place. The Wall Street billionaires and multinational will be providing the illusion of choice for the American electorate. This is crucial. So I think Sundance has done us quite a good turn here. Even though, in other words, we believe the Republicans having control of the House are in the position to conduct extensive investigations, the Democrats have already got a plan to counter it, to stem it, to control it, to manipulate the outcome, potentially even giving them the opportunity to regain control of the House of Representatives, as he said. How slick is that? Wow. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis said four brutal words to say about states that are still counting votes from the midterm. Unbelievable. It's been over a week since the midterm election. Some races haven't been called yet, and DeSantis had four brutal words to say about states still counting. By the way, as some have observed, if your election isn't announced, if the outcome of the vote isn't announced on election day, or maximally within 24 hours, you're toast. Because they're going to use a drawn-out days thereafter, just as they have in Maricopa County, to subtract supporting ballots and add defeating ballots to make sure their candidate emerges unscathed. I mean, Katie Hobbs, we had two cases here, one on each side of the country, that demonstrate the enormity of the theft here, that are mind-boggling in their implications. And the one is Katie Hobbs. Katie Hobbs in Maricopa. And the other is John Fetterman. John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. Let me just mention a statistic indicative of how ridiculous it is with the Katie Hobbs thing. Carrie Lake has 1.11 million followers on Twitter. 1,101,000. Katie Hobbs, 148,000. On Facebook, Carrie Lake, 214,000. Katie Hobbs, 11,000. I mean, there's just no question about the relative popularity of Katie Hobbs versus Carrie Lake. And similarly, after that one debate in Pennsylvania, Oz was viewed as having been the winner by 87%, he only by 13%. I mean, it was overwhelming. The very idea Fetterman could have been elected in Pennsylvania after that debate is just ridiculous beyond words. And we have proof after proof after proof of how this election was stolen. Truly disgusting. So, DeSantis calling him out is completely right. Votes are still being counted and a winner not been declared in some races. Republicans were finally projected to win the House on Tuesday, a full week after the election, when California's third congressional district was called for Trump-backed Republican Kevin Kelly. But one state stood up above the rest on election day by having all its votes counted just a few hours after the polls closed. That state was Florida, where Governor DeSantis had made election reform a top priority, as should every other of the 50 states. In May, DeSantis appointed Cord Byrd as the new Secretary of State. Byrd visited all 67 counties in Florida ahead of the midterm election to ensure efficiency and integrity of the results. Our state is committed to the highest standards of election integrity, which is why I am proud to have completed visits with all 67 supervisors of election, Byrd said at the time. I was able to see firsthand their operations and the security measures they employ to safeguard the election in accordance with state law, adding that the supervisors are ready for this election. And now is the time for you to be election ready and go to vote. During a press conference Wednesday, DeSantis was asked by reporters his thoughts on other states still counting votes over a week after the election. DeSantis ripped those states, calling it pathetic. How is it that the state of Florida, the Monday before the election, we can declare a state of emergency for Hurricane Nicole, conduct an election, count 7.7 million votes by midnight. Next morning, we're at the EOC, Emergency Operations Center. Storm hits. You have a washout of A1A, other parts. We repair that by the weekend, and these other states are still counting their votes for the election. How pathetic is that? Those would be the four words. How pathetic is that? DeSantis scored several victories last week. He won re-election by a landslide and dirt board into a solid red state. He also proved his leadership abilities by delivering on his promise to run fair and efficient elections in the Sunshine State. He deserved it, and what happened in Florida is what would have happened in every other state of the union, virtually without exception, had this been an honest election. We must get rid of these electronic voting machines. We must return to paper ballots and hand counts. If we care about democracy, it must be done. The Democrats are going to fight tooth and nail because that's the only way they can win elections, by lying, by cheating, by stealing. But if you care about the legacy of the United States, if you care about our status as a constitutional republic, if you care about having the right to make a difference in the future course of your country through the vote, you must oppose electronic voting machines. Get rid of them. Return to paper ballots and hand counts. It's cheaper and overwhelmingly more reliable. And given how they're dragging it out, it's even going to be faster. I mean, after all, what could be more absurd than having electronic voting machines that can't even count? And that reason, of course, is because they're stealing the election. They're sending as many ballots as they possibly can to adjudication to guarantee that biased, subjective observers can determine the outcome of an election by dealing with ballots that are never going to be properly recorded or tabulated, because all of that done without any supervision, without any records, without any accountability. Disgusting. Disgusting. Meanwhile, by the way, as if on cue, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer declared he looks to work with McConnell to thwart MAGA and said many are afraid of this faction. Schumer added, Republican extremists will not work with anyone in the Senate. He chided the GOP to turn away from the right flank or it will lead to disaster. Absolutely disgusting beyond words.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Joe Mercola, who's just a wonderful physician and expert, has published a new piece I've just put up on my blog that I want to review with you because it has so many disturbing aspects. Manufactured dystopia. Globalists won't stop hacking humans. Now, one of the features of Mercola's article is he gives you a summary overview. He calls it story at a glance, which I find very useful. Here's what he says in this case. Digital identity, digital twins, programmable central bank digital currency, a social credit system, human augmentation, and the Internet of Bodies, IOB, are all part of the dystopian future being rolled out by the globalist cabal as solutions to the world's problems. According to transhumanist propaganda, everyone will benefit from human augmentation. In reality, transhumanism is a eugenics program differing only in name. The post-human society envisioned by the transhumanists will have no use for billions of people. Since a vast number of jobs will be eliminated and replaced by robots and artificial intelligence, the transhumanist plan requires depopulation. A global totalitarian regime will not accept the responsibility to feed, house, and provide universal basic income and health care to billions of people who aren't useful. The logical solution is to exterminate the non-productive and transform the rest into obedient cyborgs imprisoned within the IOB 5G ecosystem. The depopulation requirement of the transhumanist utopia may be why nations refuse to address the extraordinary lethality of the COVID jabs. Digital identity, digital twins, programmable central digital bank currency, CBDC, a social credit system, human augmentation, and the Internet of Bodies, all part of the dystopian future being rolled out by the globalist cabal as solutions to the world's program. I think he's got it right. This is very, very troubling. The deeper you dig, the more you learn, the more disconcerting it becomes. Truly, in many respects, shocking. Transhumanism has long been sold as a way to make us healthier and even immortal. It's ridiculous, frankly, just ridiculous. Today, it's being promoted under the Great Reset banner of equity. The propaganda is that everyone will benefit from human augmentation, from the richest to the poorest. In reality, transhumanism is a eugenics program differing in name only. Anyone who thinks, and here's the subheading, transhumanism requires depopulation. Anyone who thinks the globalist cabal, the wealthiest people on the planet, intend to allow useless eaters to gobble up their resources to live even longer than we do already is sadly mistaken. They have no such intent. All that talk of health equity is a smokescreen, a carrot, to lure people into going along with their plan for what will ultimately be the extermination of billions. Some within this cabal, World Economic Forum advisor Yuval Noah Harari being a notable example, are openly talking about the elite's plan for a post-human society, which is precisely what it sounds like, a world without real humans. A world where everyone is augmented with, and in the case of the lower class, controlled by technology. A world without belief in a higher power than the programmers and inventors themselves. A world where robots do most of the labor. Artificial intelligence makes most of the decisions, and augmented humans run the programming. A world that has no use for billions of people. In one interview, Harari discusses the fourth industrial revolution, another term for transhumanism, noting that we're now learning to produce bodies and minds, meaning augmented bodies and cloud and artificial intelligence connected minds, and that one of the greatest challenges we face will be what to do with all the people who will become obsolete in the process. The answer, Harari proposes, may be a combination of drugs and computer games. Don't believe him for a second. Drugs and computer games have certainly been tools to distract and control the younger generation. But the future they're envisioning has no room for non-productive members. The depopulation requirement of the transhumanist utopia may be why nations refuse to address the extraordinary lethality of the COVID jabs. I don't see a global totalitarian regime accepting responsibility to feed, house, and provide universal basic income, health care, and drugs to billions of people who aren't useful to them in some way. No. The logical solution would be to exterminate the non-productive and transform the rest into obedient cyborgs imprisoned within the Internet of Bodies 5G ecosystem. COVID jabs serve a greater purpose. I believe the depopulation requirement of the transhumanist utopia is why just about every nation on the planet is refusing to address the extraordinary lethality of the COVID jabs. Disability and life insurance claims have skyrocketed. Birth rates have plummeted. Miscarriages and excess mortality are going through the roof. Yet everyone keeps pushing the COVID jabs. It appears these effects are intentional. And the only way to make sense of this chilling reality is to understand that depopulation is a necessary element of the transhumanist agenda. There are to be two classes, the augmented have-it-alls and the controlled subclass. Augmentation of the subclass will be for control measures only, and that will probably include the ability to terminate the life of anyone perceived as having outlived their usefulness within the system. We're living in a great deception. Those who have looked into transhumanism and the Great Reset can clearly see how just about everything that happens is part of a plan to manipulate the masses to accept their envisioned control system. Those who refuse to look at these issues, however, cannot see it. Moreover, they cannot even imagine that something so diabolical could be true. In the video, Max Egan of the Crow House reviews a history of the great deception we're in, the how and why people have been manipulated for decades into believing things that simply were not true, beliefs that shaped behavior and allowed the globalists to slowly and quietly move their long-term agenda for global domination along. What is the Internet of Bodies? Just what is the IOB? The RAND Corporation defines it as devices with computing capabilities that can communicate with internet-connected devices or networks that collect person-generated health and biometric data and or can alter the function of the human body. The WEF has described it as an ecosystem of an unprecedented number of sensors, including emotional sensors, attached to, implemented within, or ingested into human bodies to monitor, analyze, and modify human bodies and behavior. Key words in that sentence include the stated goal to modify human behavior. The WEF doesn't tell us who will be in charge of those modifications, but we can safely assume it will be those who have something to gain from controlling other people's actions and behaviors. FDA poised to approve implantable biosensors. While all this sounds like pure sci-fi, the U.S. Pentagon and Profuse Incorporated have already developed an implantable biosensor that tracks chemical reactions inside your body, ostensibly to detect disease. As explained by Defense One, the biosensor consists of two parts. One is a 3-millimeter string of hydrogel inserted under the skin with a syringe. The string includes a specifically engineered molecule that sends a fluorescent signal outside the body when the body begins to fight an infection. The other part is an electronic component attached to the skin. It sends light through the skin, detects the fluorescent signal, and generates another signal that the wearer can send to a doctor, website, etc. It's like a blood lab on the skin that can pick up the body's response to illness before the presence of other symptoms like coughing. The sensor allows a person's biology to be examined at a distance via smartphone connectivity. And Profuse is backed by Google, the largest data mining company in the world. Knowing that, it's hard to imagine that your biological data won't be used to boost Google's profits and further totalitarian control through biosecurity. Profuse was expecting to receive approval from the FDA in 2021, but it doesn't appear to have been approved as yet. That said, the wheels of the approval process are in motion, so it's only a matter of time. Artificial intelligence and the Internet of Bodies. In the video above, the Wellston Center now interviews Richard Solosh, editor of the Wilson Quarterly, and Eleanor Powles, director of the Anticipatory Intelligence Lab within the Wilson Center Science and Technology Innovation Program, about the IOB and the role AI will play in the coming algorithmic age. Powles makes it clear that one of the inescapable facets of the IOB is that we will be under constant assessment, under measure of computation in every aspect of our lives. From what you eat, whom you date, what you buy, how much energy you use, up to and including your vital signs and genetic data. To explain the idea behind the Internet of Bodies, she suggests you begin by thinking about how the Internet of Things work. All these smart devices that are connected not only to each other, but also to a wider network where AI can analyze and optimize all that data. Now, add to those networks health monitoring devices, from wearables to implants, which will share your most private data. AI will then analyze and optimize those data as well. And while Powell's doesn't state that such optimization will be carried out automatically without your knowledge, I see no reason to assume that that's part of the plan. Considering all of this, the biggest challenge, Powell says, will be to figure out how we can maintain control of our own futures and make sure AI is shaped to our ideals. IOB is inseparable from the eugenicist transhumanist agenda. While that warning sounds rational, just whose ideals are we talking about? To believe humanity in general will have any say in the matter is naive. We cannot think about the IOB outside of our, or separate from, the eugenicist transhumanist Great Reset. The powers pushing the IOB forward are the same ones pushing for the Great Reset. And the Great Reset goal is to create a one-world government using transhumanism as a platform for the control of the human mind and body. There are no circumstances I can see in which the ideals of the AI will be any other than that of the transhumanists, the eugenicists, and the Great Resetters. AI will make decisions based on its programming, and that programming is shaped and directed by those who aim to rule everyone else. How else can AI be shaped according to human-centric ideals when they're being funded and developed by people looking forward to a post-human society? Recognize the bill of goods. The only recourse really to maintain control of our futures is to reject the IOB. Unfortunately, this will not be easy. Few are willing to forgo what they perceive as convenience, and fewer still really understand where it's all leading to in the first place. Perhaps the best we can do right now is educate ourselves and others about the end goals, a growing understanding that all this convenience will land us in a digital prison with no possibility of escape, maybe the only thing that can prevent us. It's worth remembering that if you give up your freedom, you also relinquish your ability to protect those you love. Your children can be taken from you if you disobey. Your spouse or parents can be injured or killed, and you have no say. Canada's euthanasia laws are ripe for abuse. Already, Canada offers euthanasia for a variety of conditions and situations, from long COVID and mental illness to hearing loss and poverty that prevents living with dignity. As noted by Exposing the Darkness, after 2 years of genocidal COVID tyranny, based on the weaponization of the public health system, deployment of weaponized psychiatry to fight dissent, and eliminate mentally ill, useless eaters was expected. Considering psychology today has suggested that anti-vaxxers have a mental health problem, it's not out of the realm of possibility to imagine a day when refusing a COVID booster puts you on a euthanasia list. For now, it's supposedly voluntary. But we all know what a slippery slope that can be, especially when doctors are compensated for every patient they put 6 feet under. In at least one case, family members have stated they suspect the patient may have been coerced or tricked into signing the euthanasia form. In 2018, an Ontario man with an incurable neurological disease released audio recordings of hospital staff trying to get him to agree to euthanasia when what he wanted was assisted home care. Learn to recognize soft coercion. For decades, we've embraced technologies with our mindset on convenience and or safety. That's always how they rope us in. That's how they'll lure us into embracing the IOD as well, digital identity and CBDCs as well. We have to get smarter about this and start thinking long term, because those who want to enslave us surely do. They're planning decades into the future. The march towards CBDCs in the U.S. started last week when the Federal Reserve of New York Innovation Center, or NYIC, announced it would be launching a 12-week proof-of-concept pilot for central bank digital currency, or CBDC. It's important to realize that we will lose everything worth living for if we continue down this path without privacy safeguards and personal autonomy rights in place. Even then, it's a risk, as few laws are foolproof. Just look at how the U.S. Constitution is being trampled, even though it's supposed to be inviolable. Wow. I gotta say, that is worth rereading again, and even a third time. Meanwhile, let me observe that on the eve of the 59th, I don't like the word anniversary for traumatic or tragic events, observance of the assassination of JFK. I intend to devote our show on Wednesday to a review of exactly what happened there. Again, I have pioneered bringing about collaborative research with the best qualified experts in this case, including a world authority on the human brain who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics who is also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy, so he's an expert in the interpretation of X-rays. A physician who was in trauma room number one when JFK's moribund body was brought in, and then 2 days later was responsible for the care and treatment of his alleged assassin, Lee Oswald. A legendary photo and film analyst. Another PhD, this time with a specialization in electromagnetism, properties of light and images of moving objects, who did brilliant work dissecting how the extant version of the Zapruder film, the whole movie purportedly showing the assassination of JFK, has been massively edited, provable based upon internal features of the video that remains. Let me remind you of a few highlights of how all this fraud was perpetrated and why so much of the American public were skeptical when the Warren Report was released. When the acting press secretary, Kellerman, announced the death of JFK at 1 p.m., he pointed to his right temple and said it was simply a matter of a bullet through the head, attributing that finding to Admiral George Berkeley, the president's personal physician. Malcolm Kilduff. When the acting press secretary, Malcolm Kilduff, announced the death of JFK, he pointed to his right temple and said it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. Did you read that in the Warren Report? Indeed, that very afternoon, all the broadcast was taking place on radio and television. Most Americans were absolutely glued to the television. You got reports, for example, on NBC, See It Now, Chet Huntley, among the most important newsmen of his day, reporting two wounds, a small, clean puncture wound to the throat that had been fired from in front, where Malcolm Perry, MD, who performed a simple tracheostomy incision, had reported to the Parkland press conference convened at 3:30 that afternoon that the bullet was coming at him, that it was a wound of entry three times, and later in the afternoon, that entry wound at the right temple would blew his brains out the back of his head, attributed to Admiral George Berkeley, the president's personal physician. Notice, both of those wounds were fired from in front. Massively reported on radio and television that day. Both of those wounds were fired from in front. No wonder many were skeptical about the Warren report when it claimed there'd only been three shots fired from above and behind. Indeed, when that accounting began to trickle out, a very astute newsman of his time, who was on the air then, said, "This is incongruous. How can the man have been shot from in front, from behind?" Because they'd been reporting these two wounds, both of which were fired from in front, and now they were being told that the FBI and the Secret Service had solved the crime, that only three shots had been fired from above and behind. And, of course, the purported assassin had already been captured. Stunning stuff. Well, according to the official account, he was hit in the back, Jack, 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column. He was then Conley was hit in the back, then Jack was hit in the back of the head. Now, the fact of the matter is all three of those shots did occur. All three of those hits did take place. And if you put them together with the shot to the throat and the shot to the right temple, then you have the basic scenario where David W. Manick, M.D., now believes there was, in fact, a second shot to the head, also from the right side, virtually instantaneous with the shot that hit the right temple, which blew his brains out the back of his head. So there you have five hits on JFK. The first hit to the back, 5.5 inches below, second shot to the throat. Then after the driver, William Greer, pulled the limousine to the left into a halt to make sure he'd be killed, he was hit in the back of the head. He slumped forward, Jack eased him back up, and then he was hit both in the right temple and perhaps additionally in the right side of the head, killing him. We'll be right back and we'll take your calls after this break.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ah!
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Waiting on Jim to come back. There he is. He made it. God bless you, my friend.
Good, Mitchell. Very good. And I see we got Bruce already on the line. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Bruce, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Really quick there. My first topic is the election, or the selection, I guess we can call it. This morning on ABC News, I saw a news clip where it showed the former CIA Director Barr, along with other Republican hopefuls, challengers of President Trump. And he stated that they want to provide candidates that are not crazy, like Trump's candidates, who he blames for losing or underperforming in the election. This is pretty pathetic. Basically, they're hanging the steel now around Donald Trump's neck. And these people are all scumbags. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Sam Bankman-Fried not only sent funds, you know, a huge amount of funds to the Democratic Party, but he sent some to select Republicans. They're all rhinos, such as Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, etc. And so these people are both, they're trying to just pull it back into the post 9/11 political climate where you have, this mild conflicts on policy, but otherwise it's a total globalist government.
Well, the point you're making, Bruce, about what you got is the establishment coalescing to try to defeat Trump because he actually represents the interests of the American people. And I think that he is our champion. I mean, I'm a big fan of Ron DeSantis, but I do believe Donald Trump has a grip on the American people, unlike that exercised by anyone else in my lifetime, even JFK. Everyone loved and adored Jack and Jackie, but he did not have this really profound connection where the American people believe in Donald Trump in a way I've seen true of no other. So you're going to have all the phonies, all the frauds, all the people who worked against Trump for all those years who deceived and betrayed him, like the former Attorney General Bill Barr, who claimed there was no evidence of the theft of the election when the evidence was overwhelming and he hadn't even bothered to look. There was no investigation conducted by DOJ when he made that statement. These are people who are traitors to the United States. And I think we are reaching the point where they're going over the line. I don't advocate violence, but I sure as hell see a situation shaping up here that may leave the American people no doubt if they are forced to overthrow a tyrannical government. And this is why so many for so long have said there's no difference between the two parties. That's because you had Tweedledee and Tweedledum with the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats. This is where Trump has upset the apple cart. He has created for them massive problems, and they're trying desperately to figure out a way to solve it so far without complete but with partial success, because they have now stolen two elections that were overwhelmingly dominated by either Donald himself or his supporters. Bruce, continue.
Yeah, do you remember the movie The Untouchables?
Sure.
Yeah, we recall, you know, it's organized crime. And it was, I hear a big echo. Is that you, or is there another caller on the line?
Just go ahead.
Sure. It's organized crime, and they had the judges in their pocket, and the only way they could get around that is to switch the juries at the very end, remember? And so it all fell apart for them. That's the case we have now. The judiciary is in the pockets of these criminals. So, yeah, there's a former Senate staffer, high level, his name is Jeff Gates, and he wrote a book called Criminal State, I believe. He's basically a whistleblower. He laid it all out. This is back in the post 9/11 era on how we were misled in the war, the coordination of the media and the government. And so that's what they're returning to, a criminal state.
Well, there's not much doubt about it. That story I gave you from Joseph Mercola is profoundly disturbing about transgenderism, the global depopulation agenda, the World Economic Forum. I'm sorry to say, that appears to be where we're heading if they're able to pull it off. And I think they view Donald Trump as the greatest obstacles to success. That one man who's generated such profound loyalty among Americans because they perceive him as someone who actually cares about them and the future of the country. This is where I was so disturbed, really, that he gave a rather lackluster announcement of his campaign for president again. I thought he could have done much more with it. Your thoughts, Bruce?
Yeah, I have a question for you. Are you going to take calls tomorrow on the JFK assassination, or do you rather not?
No, sure, I'll take them.
Yeah, okay.
I'll even take them now.
I'll have questions on that.
I'll even take them now. Bruce.
Sure, maybe it'd be better that way. I don't interrupt or dirty up your presentation on Wednesday.
I'm not worried about that.
Okay, the gunshot wound to the neck, to the trachea. Did that doctor say that JFK was intubated through that hole?
Incubated?
Intubated, you know.
I don't know if they ever actually inserted the tube. They reworked that wound to the throat in my first collection of expert studies entitled Assassination Science 1998. Charles Crenshaw, MD, provided me with diagrams of the wound before and after the tracheostomy incision. And it was just a small, clean puncture wound. And he made the incision right through the small, clean puncture wound. So Malcolm Perry knew this wound up close and personal. But, you know, it was around this time they discovered the massive blowout at the back of the head. I think JFK was dead in Dealey Plaza. And I think it was just wishful thinking on their part that they had a chance to save him at Parkland. Because once they saw the massive fist-sized blowout at the back of the head that he was missing half his brains, they knew it was hopeless. He came in with no pulse, but one of the physicians claimed to detect a heartbeat. I honestly just don't believe it. The guy was dead in Dealey Plaza.
Yeah, I found it curious. Didn't they put him into a casket and send him off back to I guess it's Andrews Air Force Base instead of
he was loaded into a bronze ceremonial casket. Indeed, Charles Crenshaw was the last physician who actually closed his eyes before he was wrapped in sheets and put into this bronze ceremonial casket, which was then taken by an ambulance driver by the name of Audrey Reich out to Air Force One, where it was loaded above the plane. And it appears when Lyndon had himself sworn in, which was unnecessary under the Constitution, he drew everyone forward without the exception of a single guard left with a body, including Jackie, brought forward. They appear to have taken the body out of the casket and put it in a body bag. There was a compartment there in the plane, so that when they landed at Andrews, the body was offloaded on the opposite side while everyone was paying attention to the downloading of the bronze ceremonial casket, put in a helicopter, flown to Walter Reed, where the best pathologists in the military removed bullet fragments. The different shooters were using different weapons of their own preference, and it wouldn't have done to more than one caliber fragment to be found in the body. So they then removed the bullet fragments, put him in a pinkish-gray shipping casket, and in a black hearse took it over to the back of Bethesda, where the body was already in the morgue undergoing autopsy when Jackie in the gray Navy ambulance showed up at the fronts of Bethesda. So that Gerald Custer, who was the radiation technician who actually took the x-rays, was proceeding upstairs accompanied by two Secret Service agents to develop x-rays that they'd exposed, looked out and saw Jackie coming up to the doorway with his massive entourage and wondered what the hell was going on, because Jack was already on the autopsy table. So they effected a very clever deception. They gave a lot of thought to how they would carry this out.
Yeah, I thought it was rather strange how they had the guards there around the casket facing the casket instead of facing out like they normally do. You know, the story I heard was that Jackie felt like he was alone or something and he should be watched over. I wanted to make sure nobody opened the casket. I found it curious that he was shot in the neck, through the throat, cleanly through the throat, but his cervical spine was intact. If he was able to grab his throat, if he was hit in the neck, he would have been instantly a paraplegic.
I'm not quite sure what you're suggesting, Bruce. Jack was a naval officer, so at Bethesda they had x-rays of JFK from the past. My belief is that shot did create cervical damage. Indeed, a world authority on the human brain, who is also an expert on moon ballistics, Bob Livingston, who was also a member of a Organization of Physicians for World Peace that received the Nobel Peace Prize, believe the bullet fragmented, that part went down into his right lung and the other part upward through his brain and ruptured a tough membrane that covers a cerebellum, which is a compact part of the brain at the base, because he observed that the cerebellum had been reported extruding from that fist-sized blowout at the back of the head by multiple competent physicians at Parkland, and that would have been possible had the tentorium not been ruptured. And yet it was such a tough membrane that even the near simultaneous impact of multiple hits to the head would not have brought that about. So it was his inference that that's what had happened. Peculiarly, there's a guy who's a chiropractor by the name of Ralph Sinkay, who's a chairman of the he's the organizer, the moderator of the Oswald Innocence Campaign. I believe Larry Rivera is now the chairman. I was the first chairman of the Oswald Innocence Campaign, which is founded on the recognition that Lee Oswald was actually standing in the doorway of the book depository when the JFK motorcade passed by, meaning that he not only cannot have been the lone demented gunman, but he cannot have been one of the multiple shooters, where we've actually identified there are eight different shooters. I mean, just to tell you how far-fetched, in diverting attention. It's like you got widely reported on radio and television the day of the assassination, two shots fired from the front. And then when the Warren Commission issues its report, there are only three shots and they're all fired from above and behind. I mean, this is how massively the government lies to us, claiming there's one demented deranged gunman when there were actually eight shooters. And where I've identified six by name, rank, and serial number, the shots they fired, the impact they had, only Domegaard has identified a seventh, with which I agree, leaving only one, was on the south knoll. There was a single tree on the grass opposite what's known as a grassy knoll. You wouldn't think a gunman would have anywhere to conceal himself there. Yet I've seen two different photographs of the guy standing up holding his rifle in the hands of two different JFK experts. There's no doubt he's there. It appears each of the sponsors put up their own shooter, so they were all tied together as in a blood oath. For example, the shot to the back was fired by a Dallas deputy sheriff in the top of the county records building. The shot to the throat was fired by an Air Force expert from inside the Triple Underpass. The shot to the back was fired by an anti-Castro Cuban who was firing from the Daltex. The shot to the right temple was fired by a CIA guy at the intersection of the Triple Underpass and a picket fence. Another shot that missed was fired by a Dallas cop who was going to hit Jackie. He was using a handgun, but he was going to hit Jackie, so he pulled his shot. It wound up in the grass. Then there was Lyndon Johnson, personal hitman, was involved in firing shots at John Connally in the mistaken belief that was Ralph Yarborough. Jack and LBJ had a huge fight that morning because Lyndon wanted to get Connally, who was, had been his campaign manager and was his political, his crony and his political ally, out of the limousine. And Ralph Yarborough, whom he despised, this liberal Texas senator, in. But Jack overrode him on the ground that the chief executive of the state should ride with the chief executive of the United States. And it was too late to get the word out to the shooter. So Malcolm Mack Wallace, who was Lyndon's personal hitman, who murdered a dozen people for him, including one of his own sister because she talked too much, fired perhaps as many as three shots at Connally. He did have that shot in the back. He also had a shot in the wrist, and there was an impact in the left thigh, as many as three shots. When it would turn out much later that a distant bystander had been injured by a shot that had missed, been fired from the Daltex, because a man licker Carcano is so unreliable, it was known in World War II as a humanitarian rifle for never harming anyone on purpose. They were locked into three shots, so they had to subtract one, and that meant they had to invent what would come to be known as the magic bullet theory, where Gerald Ford was responsible for changing the location of the wound to the back from his uppermost back, which was already an exaggeration, to the base of the back of the neck, where they would then claim it transited his neck, hitting no bony structures, exiting his throat, went into the back of Connally. So you took that throat wound, which was a wound of entry, and turned it into an exit wound, and you moved the back wound upward. But where David Mantic, MD, PhD, took a patient with similar chest and neck dimension and plotted the official trajectory, and it's not even anatomically possible because cervical vertebrae intervene. Let me add, those who want to have a rather comprehensive overview can find my JFK special from 18 November 2021, which I dedicated to Oliver Stone on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Just go there and in the search bar, put in JFK special and you'll have access. We're all provided a somewhat abbreviated version in order to handle callers during the show on Wednesday. But where it turns out that although Oliver Stone would just 4 days later release his JFK Revisited, which was all about the magic bullet, He didn't, although he interviewed David Manick, he didn't even talk about Manick's disproof that it wasn't even anatomically possible, even though he had Doug Horn there, who Doug Horn has done all this brilliant work on the medical evidence and the video and photographic evidence. He didn't ask him about crucial questions about how they had actually taken a cranial saw to the skull of JFK and greatly enlarged that fist side blowout to the back of the head to make it more look more like something that could have happened if JFK were leaning way forward and been shot from behind. I mean, it's outrageous. But what he didn't know and didn't report is that Sam Kinney, who was a driver of the Secret Service limousine, at Parkland, actually found a whole bullet in the back in the limousine, which he took inside and put on a stretcher, which became the magic bullet. It was that back wound. The bullet had come out. Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, the Zapruder film, I'm going to agree, was edited, heavily edited. You can tell by watching it. The close-up, there's Connolly is having a conversation or giving orders or talking to Jackie. She's not looking at Jack. Did he ever reveal what the conversation was, what he was telling her?
I'm not aware of any conversation between John Connolly and Jackie. Jackie was just kind of stunned, you know, what was happening with Jack when he slumped forward. Eased him back up, was looking him right in the face. When
Rewatch it. I mean, this is before digital film, I mean, digital images, so it couldn't have been, you know, fabricated. She's looking at Connolly. Connolly tells something to her, and he turns around, and then the second bullet hits, whatever, it appears that his face gets ripped off from the bottom up and his head flips backwards, and Bruce, then Jackie climbs on the moves her left arm up, there's like a cut in the film or something, then she climbs on the trunk. Now all that is, you know, either it's been faked and you need to tell me how, or all this has been ignored or brushed under the rug. And that's my final question on it. You can take it where you want.
Well, Bruce, you know, I have a whole book on the great Zapruder film hoax. I had a whole conference. I brought in the best experts on the film in 2003, published a book about it 2003. You want to take a look. We have dissected this video very, very thoroughly. We know what happened. We know how it was edited. We have reports from others who saw the unedited film.
Jim, that's a Judy Wood answer. Read my book. I want you to address my question, since you're the expert on JFK. And anyone can go to YouTube and look up the Zapruder film, look for the zoomed-in version, and be able to see exactly what I'm talking about.
Bruce, I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to go more extensively into this. The question is how much I can do in a brief amount of time. I do not believe John Connolly said anything to Jackie. He did turn. I think he was trying to figure out. I believe Jack may have blurted out, "I'm hit," when the first bullet impacted Roy Killerman, who was the agent in charge of the limousine, reported that he'd made that assertion. Once he was hit in the throat, he could no longer talk. Connolly turns because he's trying to see what's going on with Jack when he's hitting the back himself. But look, we go through this in meticulous detail. Go to assassinationscience.com, for example, and scroll down and you'll find the tutorial by John B. Castorla on the Zapruder film, where he goes through and proves, you know, provides all the internal proof of what happened in the film. I've watched the film plenty of times, Bruce. And I'm telling you, this is not just my opinion. I bring together the best experts, and we've done a huge amount on the film. Check it out. You can find every frame there, by the way. John Casella created an improved version of the film by correcting for two forms of distortion, and you'll find all the frames there, 487. But it turns out there are more frames missing than are available in the original. In other words, there would have been about 1,000 frames originally. But after Greer brought the limousine to a halt, they had to remove all of that, which included the multiple hits to the head, because it was such a blatant indication of Secret Service complicity. So That was like 400 frames, and they also removed another 100 turning from Houston on down because a driver Greer swung out too widely and nearly hit a concrete barrier and had to pause to get back into line. So I believe they thought that would have shaken American confidence in the Secret Service, where I've unearthed 15 indications of Secret Service and in complicity in the crime. I know virtually every...
I'll post on grism.blogspot.com under your video if it's posted. I'll post something that you can look at and other people can look at and see what I'm talking about. That's all I had on that topic.
That's fine, Bruce. That's fine. And I'm not... I mean, everyone has an opinion about what happened to JFK, okay? And opinions about the murder film, which have been so massively edited that if you take it at face value, you're going to get a very distorted impression of what actually happened. For example, they merged the hit to the back of the head with a shot to the right temple. So, and they took out too many frames, which is why you get that violent back and to the left. Between 312 and 313 is the only remaining motion forward, but it was considerable. I mean, he slumped forward. Jackie's a backup. She was looking him right in the face when he was hitting the right temple, and perhaps also then, in David's opinion, by a second shot from the right side, and he then just slumped to the left. There was no violent back end to the left. Connolly was trying to turn around to see what was going on, but while his mouth was open, he wasn't talking to Jackie. He was trying to figure out what happened, and he himself had been hit. So, you know, you're thinking something occurred that, so far as I or the other experts who have spent endless hours on this have been able to ascertain, did not take place. But, Bruce, I welcome your opinion. Post what you like. Let me encourage everyone to spend as much time with their family, friends. We do not know how much time we have left. Wednesday, more about JFK.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...